All in preparation for the challenges that lie ahead. This is a show that feeds the mind with inspiration and truth on the issues of the day. If it's important to your life, you'll find it here. Hosted by Malcolm Out Loud.
Have you been keeping up with the Powerball jackpot? This thing is swelling like it has never swelled before, and you know, tickets are finding hard to come by. People are buying these tickets up, and they're spending all kinds of money, well, in order to try to make money or have a big prize anyways. $1.3 billion, the world's largest ever jackpot. And all you have to do is buy a ticket. I won't be buying any tickets for this, and I'll tell you why. You know, the Powerball jackpot, this is a kind of it's sweeping the nation. I mean, people, it's a lottery frenzy. And you know what I wonder is the odds are actually more difficult the bigger it grows to win. They even get more difficult, the odds, yet people are incentivized to go buy more tickets, which really doesn't make a lot of sense, folks, if you think about it. I mean, you're better off going after a smaller prize that less people are playing, maybe, and the odds might be greater. But that's not the way people think. They think in the terms of, oh, this thing is huge. But, you know, I mean, what's the logic in this? I mean, if a lottery was half of this, $500 million, would you be able to live on that? Would you be happy with that? Sure you would. I mean, do you need $1 billion? Do you need $1.3 billion? Could you spend all that money? So why wait till the lottery is over $1 billion before you get excited and go buy a couple of tickets when your odds of winning are even worse than they would be ordinarily in a normal lottery, you know, week when people are not, you know, emptying their wallets and credit cards to go buy tickets? That's what I'm here for, folks, to just inform you and keep you, you know, up to speed here. It's Malcolm All Out here. Welcome. And, you know, this, I didn't play the lottery. I've never played the lottery in my life. I've never spent a dollar bill on tickets. I don't like the lottery. And there's a lot of reasons why I don't like the lottery. But the biggest one is I grew up that way with a dad who always played the lottery. Fact is, you know, there were times growing up as a boy where I remember this, you know, it's almost like you could see it in his eyes. He was like, I don't know, people get so possessed with this lottery business. He thought he was going to win. My dad thought he was going to win the lottery year after year after year. And of course, he would talk about vacations and holidays, things he wanted to do. You know, I grew up in a, you know, lower middle class family, 7 children. So, you know, money, you had to stretch money. It didn't go, you know, so easy. I mean, and so playing the lottery to me was it was sort of the cheap way out. I didn't find that the victory in life. I think the victory in life is when you work hard and you earn it and you feel good about what you're doing. And, you know, but imagine the anxiety if you did win all this money and, you know, how do you spend it? And that's what one guy says here. He goes on and says, man, he said, I think I would go into a state of anxiety, but it would be a good anxiety, he says, smiling. He said he would retire and donate some of the money and work on administering the rest. It would be a full-time job, he says. He'd have to hire people just to watch the money. What kind of a life is that? Think about it, you know. Well, so what are the chances in winning this thing? Well, the odds right now, there'll be 1 in 292.2 million. How's that for some odds? You have a better odd of getting hit by lightning, better odds of becoming a pro basketball player. I mean, you know, the odds on this thing, you have better odds of you know, running 10 marathons than you do of winning this lottery. So why play? You know what I used to always say? Why don't you roll down your window and give a couple of bucks to a homeless man? Yeah. 75% of all the possible combinations were purchased in last week's drawing. 75%, and still nobody won. Well, it's not exactly true, though. Some people did win. We just didn't hear anything about it. What happened is they didn't win the big, big, big money, but there were 25 people that won $1 million by matching 5 numbers. So it's a $1 million prize. It's at least a weekend out of Tiffany's, right? how far does $1 million go today, I wonder, yeah? And 3 other people won a $2 million prize, and that's because they paid extra to multiply the smaller prize winnings. So I guess they may, I don't even know how you win this thing. I've never paid a lot of attention. I seriously don't play the lottery. I've never bought tickets in my life. But I'm not a big gambler anyways. I'm not one of these guys that go to Vegas and, you know, sit down at the poker table or the slots and, you know, start emptying my wallet and credit cards and checks. I don't even enjoy it. I mean, it doesn't excite me. Some people find this just a form of entertainment and they don't really plan to win. Now that I can understand. If you're doing it to entertain yourself and you've got the money to do that, then I have no problem with. And you're not, you know, you don't care whether you win or lose, and you're not banking your whole life on it, and you don't need the next holiday or vacation from the lottery winnings, then super, terrific. Then have a ball. It's a form of entertainment. No problem. It's like playing a video game or pinball machine. So you play the lottery, or you play the slot machine or something else. I don't have a problem with that. But it's those who bank their whole life on it. It's those people who really, you know, they get fire in the eyes, and they just, you know, they don't know how to separate reality from this really world of make-believe. And so anyways, that's the lottery. But you know, there's another way to win the lottery in life without ever buying a ticket. And this one you have no control over, but that would be to be the granddaughter of Picasso. That would be sort of a lottery as well. And sort of if you're gifted with that and fortunate enough to be the granddaughter of Picasso, well, that's what's happened with Marina Picasso. And actually, she cashed out back in June, made some money. I mean, she made, I think it was well over $12.3 million by selling an auction off about 126 ceramics from his estate. So this is the granddaughter of Picasso. It's the daughter of the Picasso's son, okay? She's 65 years old now, the artist's eldest son. She inherited about 10,000 pieces from the estate back in 1975. So some of these other pieces, beside what they've already cashed out, they're going up between, you know, 4,000 euros to 180,000 euros for each item now. You may need to win the lottery just to go buy one of these Picasso pieces, huh? And actually, some of the pieces, I didn't know he had all these pottery collections. I mean, I follow art, and I knew he had some magnificent work, as you all do. But I had no idea he had this sort of a massive collection of ceramics and terracotta pieces. But they're pretty impressive, actually. I wouldn't mind having a couple of these at the house or the office, the studio. It was a great impressionist and a fabulous artist. But anyways, that is another way to win the lottery. And, you know, another man who's gambled all his life is David Bowie. He passed away. We'll talk about that. General Motors, they are facing a trial over a recall ignition switch. Big problems for them, and couldn't happen to a better company. And could gas prices go below $1 a gallon? And what about the states that people are all moving from? And what are the reasons? I got all those stories coming right up for you. Be right back after the break. Well, gas prices are pretty low, and they keep falling and falling. And, you know, there are some predictions right now that they could fall below $1 a gallon. Below $1 a gallon. And I don't remember the last time it was below $1 a gallon. It seems like I was a pretty young guy, but by all the stats I'm seeing here, they're saying that gas was below $1 a gallon. Last time it was that way was back in 1999. Now, I wouldn't have guessed that. I would not have guessed that 1999, 1998, it was below $1 a gallon. I don't remember it. I would have went back another 15, 20 years, but that could be the case. It's right now, it's dropping below most of the country, below $1.42 a gallon, they're saying. AAA and Gas Buddy, they're the organizations that follow gas prices around the country. And of course, this has spurred on a tremendous amount of economic push, and people are traveling more and not afraid to get in their cars and drive because you can afford the gas. And that's a big deal. So gas is falling pretty fast here. I'm looking here, and I think, in the area where I'm at in the southeast, it's running about, I think, about $1.80, maybe it's a little less than that. I don't pay a lot of attention to gas prices. I don't know. It's funny. I had a friend who would travel across he would go to the next city to save 3 cents on gas. Sometimes it was 2 cents on gas. I don't think he realized that sometimes he'd be traveling way out of the way to save a couple of cents on gas, and sometimes it doesn't make sense. But we get this mental attitude about gas prices somehow, like we're saving a buck or two, a dollar, a penny or two or three. But of course, every penny or two counts, obviously, and they can turn into dollars. But I don't know, one trip to the gas station isn't going to quite do that, I think. And but it is good to see gas prices fall, and there are a lot of reasons why. And as the political Middle East continues to unravel, we never know where the stability of gas prices is going to be. So count your blessings right now. Fill your car up and or your truck up, and let's just keep our fingers crossed and hope that they continue to fall. And a lot of the reasons are because of the energy that we've now been exploring here in the U.S., and this is a big deal. I mean, we're fracking now. We're able to obtain all types of, we talked for how many decades about energy independence. We talked about getting away from the Middle East with, being tied to their energy. I mean, we'll never be away from the Middle East for other reasons, but as far as energy goes and gas prices, I mean, that's, you know, we don't want to be dependent on another country or another region of the world, and that's been a real problem with the Middle East. So, hey, hee-hee for gas prices, and we're glad to see it and glad that you have some more money in your pocket and less money in their pocket, and that's the key to that. But you've been following this General Motors thing with the ignition switch at all? This trial and what's been going on with this whole General Motors thing has been driving me crazy, I have to tell you, and for a lot of reasons. I think this company is a miserable company of existence, General Motors. I am not a fan. You know, and to think we bailed them out with American taxpayer money continues to irritate me, to think that the government stepped in, used our money to bail these people out, and, oh, this was a great American tradition, and we need to keep our car companies, and, you know, these are good, solid companies, and you know what? When you look at what they've done here, there's nothing American about General Motors. I'm sorry. Not a darn thing. And if you're one of the unfortunate families who've lost a family member that died from General Motors, then you would agree with me, clearly. If you haven't been following this case and you don't know anything about it, then you probably don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Well, they're set to go on trial this week in a lawsuit over their, in 2014, the recall of millions of vehicles. Again, I've been following this story right along for a faulty ignition switch, okay? Do you remember the faulty ignition switch? You may not know the whole story, but I'm sure you caught pieces of it somewhere, okay? Well, this thing is linked to nearly 400 injuries and deaths. This is not a small problem, guys, okay? Well, when it started to come out, what they were telling everybody now is to take your keychains, okay? And everybody with a keychain, they have more than one key on a keychain. The idea of a keychain, I mean, you know, educate everybody, is to put all your keys on it. I mean, you wouldn't need a keychain if you only have one key. More than likely, you don't need a keychain for one key. You may want to put that on there, but that's not normal the case. So you have multiple keys. Well, then what General Motors started doing is they started flagging everybody and saying, well, you know, you got to remove your excess keys and you got to get everything off the keychain because it's putting stress on the ignition switch. I mean, and so it defeats the whole purpose of a keychain. If you have a keychain, I don't like keys anyways. I'm sort of a remote guy, so I like to press buttons and open stuff up. I don't like keys and change in my pocket. You know the old way, you know, maybe years ago, I mean, you walking, I always associate that with kind of guys walking around, you hear all that noise and jingle in the pocket. I don't know, it's just not me. It's not I like clean and simplicity, minimalistic, if you will. Less things on me. I like remotes, just press the remote, then you don't have to worry about the ignition switch, do you? Just got to worry about the batteries being up to speed on the remote, I think, huh? But General Motors, so what they've done here is this was a real big problem. And like I said, there are multiple lawsuits on this thing. When you got something that's 400 injuries and deaths, you got a real problem, my friends. So one of the lawsuits is the plaintiff is Robert Schurz, and he claims he was injured when his 2003 Saturn ran off the highway, became airborne, and then struck the ground in trees. This was back in May 2014, if you will, okay? Well, the front airbag did not deploy, and he blamed that all on the switch, which there's been proof of this now. He followed GM's instructions to remove all but a single key from his key ring. What was I telling you a moment ago, right? So the new rules of the road for General Motors, if you have one of their cars, is don't use a key ring, just use a single key. How lame is that? I mean, and that's supposed to be the innovative, car-trending, fabulous American ingenuity of a company that we saved with our taxpayer money. It's a joke, is what it is. Well, already they've agreed to pay roughly $2 billion in civil and criminal penalties and settlements over the switch over the past several years, my friends. We're talking $2 billion with a B, okay? And GM began recalling these cars back in about early 2014, if you will, about 2.6 million cars that have the faulty switch. And what happens is that the car, as you're driving along, can slip out of place, stalling engines and preventing airbags from deploying. And a lot of evidence has emerged now that GM always knew about this problem. In fact, they were up on the Hill. Congress questioned them, and the CEO, if I remember, Mary Barra there, they questioned her and questioned a lot of the GM officials. And, of course, they were pleading ignorance at the time. But since then, a lot of evidence has come out, and it has proven that they knew all along, and they tried to bury the problem. Now, that's what makes this problem so bad. It's one thing when you create a crappy product. You make a crappy product. You know, all right, so, and maybe it was an innocent mistake at first. Maybe you knew it was a crappy product, but people were buying your crappy product, and therefore, you know, I mean, everybody knew, it's all fair, right? But then, the crappy product, you then tried to hide it from folks, to try to sell it and say, oh, no, this is a great product. There's nothing wrong with our ignition switches. They're not doing anything wrong with the cars. And this is what General Motors did. They tried to hide the fact that their cars were crappy and try to sell it like they were quality. Go back and look at the commercials while this thing was going on in the last several years. You didn't see a commercial come on television or radio that say, well, go buy a General Motors car. We have the crappiest cars in the industry. And the taxpayers saved us and put, you know, millions of dollars in so we could still survive because we screwed up our company 10 times over. I don't remember seeing that commercial, actually. No, their commercials were they had the best quality cars and they were the best type of company. And it's not what happened, my friends. So again, GM, they paid $900 million in September to end there was a criminal probe going on. So, and they had to pay almost $1 billion. And I reported on that, I remember. And they took a $575 million charge to settle these almost 1,400 injury and death cases. You know, the whole thing is sick. Really, really sick. And the fact that this happens, it should not happen this way. And they should be, and there was talk about them being brought up on criminal charges. And they should have been brought up on criminal charges, as far as I can see. And David Bowie, one of the most iconic and influential forces in the past century, has passed away. And sad to see this. You know, 69 years old, cancer. Had been battling cancer for 18 months, which it was hard to see. You know, I just seen his video last week, and I commented to a friend, wow, he looks very good. I'm serious. This is his brand new video. He's got a brand new album out that was just released last week on his birthday, his 69th birthday. The album is called Black Star. I mean, and this agent is saying this is a gift back to his fans. And by the way, the video, Lazarus, very spooky sort of video, which obviously Lazarus, I mean, plays back now as you see it. Now he's gone. And, you know, this guy, I was looking at an article here in Fast Company. I love Fast Company. Love some of their stuff here. And they've got a GIF file in here, and they show all the faces of David Bowie. And pretty incredible, actually, when you look at all the signature looks he's had over the years. Anyways, David Bowie is gone at 69 years old, and we still have his work to celebrate his life by. So, well, listen, a little bit later in the show, I've got Robert Rice joining us, an entertainer and collector of all things happy. I'll share with you my happiness and Dr. Seuss. And also, this monkey has no rights to a selfie, a federal judge says. I'll tell you about that right after the break, folks. Well, what about being a kid at heart? No matter what your age, if that was your focus, I think when we're kids and we have that sort of childlike attitude, it helps us be more innovative, be more unique, problem solve more, and actually enjoy ourselves a little bit more. Well, we'll have on the show today Robert Rice. He's an entertainer and collector of all things happy. He's the creator of the big old box of stuff. And going to talk to him about memes. Memes were pretty big in 2015. There were a lot of interesting ones. And he's got the list of the top memes of the year. I want to talk to him about some of those memes and really discuss what it would take today to be a kid at heart and how we can all have a little bit of fun in our lives. There's a lot of new trends that came out of 2015. Selfies. I mean, whoever would have thought that selfie became, you know, I mean, such a trend. And I don't even think we knew what that word was a while back. I mean, selfie. A lot of these words now are being added to, you know, our vocabulary. They're being added to the dictionary. Now every year they add like a ton of new words. We just keep making up stuff. That's what I like about all of this stuff. But what about a selfie? Well, there's a monkey who has been in the news who has sued. There was this lawsuit from PETA. The pet people there, you know, PETA, and they were suing the monkey. He took a selfie. So what happened is this is in Indonesia, okay? And a British photographer, David Slater, left his camera out, right? And this monkey actually went over. He must have seen his face or something, the lens or off the camera, whatever. He actually played with the camera and took a photo of it. Well, you're not going to, the picture is mind-blowing. I'm going to put it up on the Twitter feed so you can go see what it is. And he's one of those picturesque monkeys. They're called a macaque monkey, macaque, M-A-C-A-Q-U-E. And the monkey took the selfie. I'm not making this up. Of this camera that was left from the photographer. Well, now what's ensued here is a lawsuit. Okay, now the monkey's name, he's a six-year-old male. It's called Naruto. And he's the picture's crazy. I mean, he's grinning like cheek to cheek here, very broadly with a smile, with his teeth showing. It's hysterical. I mean, he's very, very prestigious looking, and this monkey is, and he's kind of buck tooth as goes on here, and he's looking into the lens, and it's a wild photograph. And so Mr. Slater published a book called Wildlife Personalities, and includes the pictures and the images that are shared online, and I guess the picture of this monkey. Well, what's happened is PETA came out, and there's a lawsuit on this against Mr. Slater and his company, and the company that published the book, asking the judge to allow that the monkey owns the selfie. How can a monkey own a selfie? And where is PETA going with this? What do they want out of this thing? But you think they have better things to do than to fight over something like this? But they're actually fighting and the lawsuit. And so the judge anyways ruled on this and says the monkey has no rights to the selfies. And this is a federal judge now. You talk about a stupid lawsuit and a waste of money. And the monkey cannot own the photograph. And they can't own the photograph copyright. It belongs to the camera owner, which is this photographer from a British photographer, David Slater. So, you know, it's just, you chuckle when you hear stories like this, and you wonder, is there anything else these people have to occupy their life with, or is this the very best they can do, you know? You just rack your head with what is PETA up to these days, and why do they do these kinds of things, you know? Well, anyways, I've got a list here I want to share with you about the top states that people are moving from, and why are they moving from these states, and the states that people are moving into. You know, we talk about gas prices being cheaper, and we talk about, you know, the economy having a little more money in our pocket, but that's some of the reasons that play into this list. Now, this is a very fascinating group here and survey, and it's actually a gentleman that wrote this. I've actually had on my radio and television productions before, Salim Firth of Heritage Foundation, and they do some great work over there on Heritage. And so he has a list here of the top five outbound states of 2015. So these are the top five states now that people are moving from, like they're leaving in droves. What do you think they are? Top state, they're leaving New Jersey. People are leaving New Jersey, leaps and bounds. In fact, 67% of the moves in New Jersey were outbound. That's not a good proposition, folks, if you're trying to keep wealth into a state. The second state, New York, right on the side of New Jersey. The third, Illinois. Sure, talk about that crime rate in Chicago, probably plays to that point. The fourth, Connecticut. The fifth, Ohio. You can see the trends here, can't you? They're all cold northern states that are expensive as hell to live in. And that is exactly what Salim Firth talks about here. He says that Americans are moving to places with affordable cost of living and strong labor markets, or good retirement communities, if you will. And all these markets they have in common is that these states they're relatively affordable places to live. You know, the ones that people are moving into, these are expensive, the list I just gave you. Yeah. So we're talking about some of those states right now. Let me give you that list. Top five inbound states. Now, these are states that people want to move into. I would not have guessed the first state on this list. I would not have known this. Oregon. Oregon's the first state that people are moving into. The second, South Carolina. Usually the South holds up pretty well in this list. Usually Florida comes in pretty high in this list, but they're not on the top five here. Number third is Vermont. The fourth is Idaho. The fifth is North Carolina. Again, another southern state, you know. And these are the states that people are moving into. So let me give you, listen to this here. The reason people are moving out of that first group of states, all right, in Oregon, the average owner occupied, now Oregon's a good state, that's the number one state that people are moving into now, all right, you can buy a home there for $305,000, compared to, well, how about $730,000 in San Francisco in California, and $380,000 in Seattle, so it just varies, obviously, by market, but he goes on to say here that moving patterns show how important cost of living is to American families. With perfect weather and a booming high-tech economy, he's very surprised that California, they should be the number one destination, but they're not. And more moving trucks are leaving the state of California than anything. And again, that has to do with the fact of the cost of living in California. I mean, you got beautiful weather, you got a boom in technology. He points that out, but the cost of living in California is very high. A lot of regulation, a lot of taxes, big tax state. And people don't want that. That doesn't make for a very good quality of living, folks. So they don't want that at all. So that's what it is. I think, it's good to know where we want to move next or where we don't want to move to and stay away from this, the places that are too expensive. Well, let's face it. It's like when you move into these big, big houses and, you spend all your energy working just to keep the house up. Sometimes it doesn't make any sense, my friends. I mean, sometimes it does not at all. Well, listen, my favorite author growing up was Dr. Seuss. I love Dr. Seuss, man. I just love his imagination, his stories, the characters he created, the uniqueness of Seuss. I got every kid's book he ever wrote. I've got his adult books, too. He's got some adult books, believe it or not. And, Seuss has a magnificent collection of art. It's quite a story behind this. Theodore Seuss Gazelle, out of Springfield, Massachusetts, where they were living up there. His wife, Audrey Gazelle, were amazing people. I write about them on the Brink of Greatness. Check that out, brinkofgreatness.com. I write all about Dr. Seuss and some of the lessons from Dr. Seuss. In fact, he had a new book come out. Audrey, his widow, found some of his older work, and they released a new book this year, which was the first book since Oh, the Places You Go, which was 25 years ago. Pretty amazing. What Pet Should I Get is the name of that. Check that out as well. Well, coming up, I got a man that talks to. He's a kid at heart. He likes all the fun stuff. Robert Rice. Got to talk to him about memes. Why are memes so big? And why do we all like to follow these trends and these crazy things? A lot of memes last year. He'll tell us what the hottest ones were. I look forward to that conversation just ahead here. Well, we're back with you here, and, memes have become such a big thing. I mean, I didn't even know what that word meant a couple of years ago when they started talking about it. What is a meme? But it's become one of the hottest things, and if you're on the internet, and who isn't, you certainly are probably paying attention to some of this or following it. It becomes sort of the trends out there of what's going on. We're joined back with Robert Rice, and he's an entertainer, comic, and the creator of this big old box of stuff, which we're going to find out about, big old box of stuff. I have no idea, but we'll find out. So let me welcome you along into the show here. Robert, it's good to have you.
Thank you.
Let me ask you here. You talk about helping people be a kid at heart. That kind of rings to me a little bit because there's a lot of stress out there. People are very stressed, and you can't help not to carry this stress with you no matter what. I mean, no matter what you do in life. I mean, people are stressed, the economy, the society as a whole, and your family and life, and certainly coming through the holidays, a very stressful time for folks. So how can one stay a kid at heart, really? What are some of the things people can do to try to stay a kid at heart?
I believe a large part of it is finding something that resonates with your childhood, whether it be a toy, a book, a movie, a cartoon, and find a little bit of a part of a day that you can just kind of devote to that and really just turn off the news or get away from the headlines for a moment so that you can, indulge yourself in what once was fun to you. And I think the rest will come naturally. I really do. Anytime you see a certain movie or cartoon that you used to watch as a kid, you're automatically drawn to it.
Yeah. Well, it helps us be creative, too. I mean, creative problem solving in life. But I think a lot of people get a little too serious, maybe, and don't know how to step off of all that and have some fun. Now, you, looking at your stuff here, and looking at, your program and what you do as a comic, you're a stand-up comic, right?
No, sir. I'm actually, I look into comic books and that side of the entertainment business. Some people say I'm pretty funny, but as far as a comic goes.
I see. I didn't know that. Okay. Well, all right. I assume you're all right. So, so let me ask you the big question. Have you ever grown up or are you still a kid?
Oh, I've definitely not grown up. I mean, my office has Indiana Jones posters. I'm surrounded by Star Wars and comics and toys and all that, which pretty much makes me still a kid. I mean, my 11-year-old daughter is trying to catch up with me in that.
See now, for me, I love Dr. Seuss, okay? I love Dr. Seuss. I have every book Seuss ever did, both all the kids' books, the adult books, everything. So that, to me, is where I kind of go back in time. And Theodore Geisel, do you ever read his books? Or
I love Dr. Seuss. One of my absolute favorites is The Places You Will Go.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Read that, and you'll have a total understanding of what you're meant for.
Of life. You'll have a total understanding of life. You know what I've done with those books? I actually have a couple of dozen of those books on me at any given time, and I use those to give away as gifts, you know.
Wonderful gifts.
Yeah, I do.
Wonderful.
I give them away as gifts, and sometimes I'll use them as for different clients and things, and I just find it fun. I love Seuss. It's pretty cool. So anyways, I think it is important to stay a kid at heart. I mean, listen, we're all pretty focused in the zone. I know I am. But you know, one of the things I do as well today, and I'm going to admit it to everybody now, I was telling my friend Angie the other day this, but I play Angry Birds still. So a lot of the times, and I like the new one, Angry Birds too, because the different worlds and things they have. So a lot of times I'm like heavy into news or I'm doing something that's, you know, pretty mind-blowing, and I'll just disconnect and say, you know what, I've had enough of this. And I'll go to Angry Birds too and play that. Pretty insane, huh?
No, that's one way to get your stress out. I mean, really, stress of the day, you know, you have to unwind somehow.
I know. Well, we got something in common. You know, for sure. Well, let's talk about these memes. I mean, tell folks, first of all, if I don't know if everybody really knows. I'm assuming they know what a meme is, but how do you describe a meme?
The best way to describe it is a little pack of culture. Basically, it's a virtual transmitted cultural symbol or social idea. Instead of a verbal joke, you basically get a visual one-punch joke that everybody can share in, you know, in their circle.
And related to the internet, it's just something that seems to catch on fire, huh?
Absolutely, especially Facebook is huge. I don't know of anybody who has a Facebook account that, you know, every three or four scrolls they don't come across a meme.
Exactly.
I mean, they're everywhere.
Well, they become trends. They're what we're talking about and what's going on. And, you know, I mean, Donald Trump's been a meme quite a bit, huh?
Absolutely. Yes, sir, he has.
Yeah. I mean, all kinds of things.
Talk about some hair.
Yeah, right. His hair. You're right. That's a big meme out there. Yeah. So you kind of get the idea of what memes are, folks. And so 2015 was a big year for memes. And I suspect that 2016 will also be a big year. I mean, they're certainly not going away because we've all embraced the internet in such a big way today, Robert, as our culture, as our entertainment and the way to, you know, live our lives. I mean, so let's talk about some of the top memes in 2015, some of the top 10 memes that sort of have been release that Google's been kind of bragging about. And what are some of the hottest memes this past year?
Actually, I have a little list here. I know number one in the list that I had received was at 120 million views. It's the single Watch Me Whip, which is a song that after you listen to it maybe three times, you're pretty much tired of it unless you're under the age of eight. And a lot of people have made memes about, you know, watch me throw up or something like that to that effect.
Now, what's the name of that meme you're talking about? What's the song again? It's Watch Me What?
It's Watch Me Whip.
Watch Me
and
Whip.
And it's a dance that that mainly kids do nowadays.
You know, I think Logan, yeah. I think my 12-year-old was doing it the other day. Do you know the words to it?
Watch Me Whip. Watch Me Nay-Nay, I think.
That's it. Watch me Nay-Nay. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What, are you going to just say it? Are you just going to say the words or are you going to sing it for me?
Oh, you don't want me to sing because everyone will hang up and call. You will get so many complaints. It's not even funny.
All right. So we won't sing then, but so that's the Nay-Nay song. Yeah, what are some of the other memes this past year that were hot?
Clash of Clans had a great one with Liam Neeson, who is pretty much mentioning that his troops are going into battle and you better watch out because, I mean, let's face it, he's Liam Neeson. You don't want to cross that man. So it's just a great little meme there.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. It's great. There's an awesome Walking Dead one for people who follow The Walking Dead for the season finale. With Stewie Griffin in the place of one of the characters, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it's absolutely perfect. I mean, I genuinely laughed out loud because I followed The Walking Dead pretty religiously, And it's a phenomenal meme. I know with Star Wars coming out, there was a huge one with, once again, Liam Neeson, who played a Star Wars character in episode one, who also played the character in Taken, saying, "If you spoil episode 7 for me, I will find you and I will kill you."
Yeah.
And that got really big responses. I know I posted that on my website personally. So
pretty cool. Yeah. All right. Tell me about this this big old box of stuff. You have a very unusual business model with this. I looked at the site just earlier. Big old box of stuff, and basically you put a box together of all kinds of things that people will like. And I wonder how you qualify all that, but you must ask them some questions up front, huh?
Yes, sir. They have a questionnaire. They go to the website and go to the questionnaire. We have, over 50 categories that you can choose from, and you fill in the blank and you submit your order. We get that sheet and we go from there. If it says that you like Star Wars and Wolverine and a few other items, we will tailor a box with Star Wars, Wolverine, and whatever else that you said. And we'll put those items inside your box. So you're going to get pretty much a box of everything that you like. Even if you don't like the item, at least you like the genre in which it is in.
And that's the whole concept that people kind of sign on for, huh? So it's kind of like a big surprise, huh?
That's it. A surprise of things that you're into.
That you're into, yeah. And let me give the website, bigolboxofstuff.com, bigolboxofstuff.com. And it looks like it's just fun. You're out to just kind of have some happy and spread the fun around and make people happy, huh? That's your gift.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Absolutely. I try my best.
That is your gift, yeah, obviously. And obviously that fits right into the memes and everything we're talking about on the internet. But, hey, Robert, thanks for joining me here. Big old box of stuff, and that's Robert. You'll find out more about him. Folks, that's a wrap. It's been a good production, and it's good to have you with me today. You'll find out more back at brinkofgreatness.com. Got a lot going on the platform right now. It's exciting to have you with us. Remember, folks, get involved, get loud.